This is the Switch Everything Podcast, and I'm your host, Josh Linke. I'm on Twitter at TheZagaholic. I'm joined by my co-host, Elliot Braxick, on Twitter at ElliotB21. This podcast is dedicated to all things college basketball, from the mid-majors to the blue bloods and everything in between. Join us weekly as we offer our take on the sport we love, discuss the history of the game, and occasionally chop it up with players and coaches from across the nation. Let's go! Welcome back to the Switch Everything Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Linke, and as always, I'm joined by BBN's own Elliot Braxick. How are you doing today, Elliot?
I'm doing good, man. I'm looking forward to talking about some positive things from the past week, not necessarily what happened over the weekend, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's been a few weeks. We recorded that first episode for season two and then, you know, got into the busy holiday season and some localized illnesses in our between our families, but we're happy to get back to it. So to open things off, you know, the last couple of weeks have been pretty interesting for some results across both Gonzaga and Kentucky's schedule. As you referenced, this last weekend was kind of a mixed bag for Kentucky. Kentucky goes in 20 piece on Miami, who was a top 10 team in the nation at the time. And then unfortunately, UNC Wilmington comes in and rains on the parade a little bit. You know, I do want to preface this to say UNC Wilmington is not a bad program. You know, especially, you know, a lot of people look at their conference, they'll look at their record and they'll be like, oh, That's a bad win or a bad loss for Kentucky, but it's really not. Like, at the end of the day, this is probably going to end up somewhere in the range of a quad three loss, since it was at Rupp. But you know, it's not like a bottom of the barrel sub 300 team or something like this. We're talking about, right, you know, a kind of a middle of the road, like lower 100s level program. So you know, I wouldn't stress too much about it. I think there's a lot to be said about the fact that Kentucky is a very young team this year. There's a lot of freshmen. There's a lot of guys trying to figure out how to play together. This was Aaron Bradshaw's first game back from injury. Obviously, DJ Wagner didn't play. He's been, you know, dealing with a little bit of lower extremity problems since the Miami game. And, you know, you're still working back you know, some of your other players, Z, everybody's been talking about free big Z, and you know, whether his eligibility happens or not, you know, that's something to think about. And then Ugana Onyenso is still out with an injury. So I was very impressed with Kentucky's win over Miami, considering all of that, you know, understanding that I expected Miami to come in and potentially beat Kentucky at Rupp. But the opposite happened. Kentucky looked amazing, and maybe the best I've seen them look since that year when Shibue won National Player of the Year. So I think that's a really a big win.
It definitely was, and if anything, it did a lot to bolster the fan base. You know, many people have said this before, and it rings true that the Big Blue Nation is one of the biggest fan bases nationwide. Just the geographic spread we have, we're our own worst enemy, however, at times. You know, you mentioned the Miami win followed by the UNCW loss. You know, I make no excuses for it. I was very unhappy that they lost the game. I may have put a wager on the game that was foolhardy to make and then had to suffer those consequences. So I, you know, the FAFO definitely struck me that day. But I'll say that a lot of fans really want to see this team do well. They want to see this team, you know, get better than they have been and be what they were circa 2016-17, a la 2014-15. You know, those are the years that they were really looking to get back to. A lot of fans were, you know, riding high and immediately jumping off after that loss this past weekend. And you know, like I said, I'm not happy about losing. I never want to lose, especially at Rupp. But you know, you can tell there were a lot of factors that came into that loss. Whether they were the dominating factor or not doesn't really matter. But you know, the emotional high of Aaron Bradshaw coming in, the emotional low of DJ Wagner not being able to play. The court was a brand new court. It was debuted for the first time after the Kentucky women's volleyball team won their region and were able to advance in the tournament. You look at other things as well. Like this is the coach that was a former player at Garner Webb. You know, a lot of factors weighed on this game that were external that had nothing to do with the actual outcome. So this had all the makings of a trap game, and you know, they lost. So, you know, you take the good with the bad, you take the bad with the good. So with the season not starting off as we would have hoped beating Kansas, we got the quote unquote moral victory of hanging with a team that has a candidate for National Player of the Year on there with Trey Mitchell as our big man and Adu Thiero. A lot of people were questioning Aaron Bradshaw's motivation to be on the team. If you really wanted to play, or if he was going to be another Jared Vanderbilt kind of situation, or maybe even a Shaedon Sharpe situation. If you were watching the game on Saturday and you saw his first dunk, the excitement, you could see it in his body language. With the pass down to him, he fumbles it, he grabs it, he's able to wrestle it away from the defender, and then just power down a slam. Dude's 7'2", but he still got up there and dunked it. Any doubt that I would have had, which I didn't, but any doubt that was in there at all that I didn't know about was gone when I saw that. Dude absolutely wants to play here, you could tell. And if we can get, you know, Big Z able to sustain a week's worth of meals without getting sick and you know, an eligibility clear up from NCAA, we could have a really good duo. And when Hugo is ready to go as well, you know, I've heard a lot of the talk about him is more just recovery from the injury. So if he's able to stay on track and pace things out, you know, a January type return for him in perfect time for conference play, you know, the Wildcats are looking pretty good with four games left to play in December. Maybe better than some would have thought, maybe not. It just, at the end of the day, you know, when you look at a 6-2 Kentucky, I think they're 16th in today's AP poll. You got to like where they're at. I mean, you can't win them all. And now you don't have to worry. You don't have that extra pressure of having to worry about winning them all. So time for Camp Cal to kick in these next couple weeks and to play loose. I do want to ask you, because we didn't get a chance to talk about, you know, what's your impression been so far this year of a young Gonzaga team? And then as juxtaposed to how they performed and how the Maui Invitational went, what are your thoughts and opinions on that?
You know, obviously Gonzaga lost to Purdue in the opening game of the Maui Invitational, but I think most people kind of had that circled as a likely loss anyways. It wasn't like we came into that with exceeding expectations on our mind, you know, and to be fair, Gonzaga actually looked pretty good through the first part of that game up until the beginning of the second half. You know, we led I think all of the first half, actually by a pretty good margin at some points. And then in the second half, we started missing shots, and it wasn't like we were missing contested shots. We were missing wide open looks, and it just, things did not fall, you know, and it's frustrating because we really couldn't do a lot on the interior because Zach Edey is, you know, one of the most formidable forces in the paint in the entire country. Our game plan kind of had to change as a result. It just didn't really, you know, like I said, the shots just didn't fall. And that's kind of, it's real similar to what happened last year at the PK 85 against Purdue. We ended up getting run by them in the second half. Real similar story. Shots just didn't fall. It sucks that happens 2 years in a row, especially in a game when, you know, the coaching staff was chomping at the bit to get revenge on Purdue for what they did last year. But you know, it is what it is. There's not really a lot we can do about that. We moved on to Syracuse in round two, and you know, that was an easy game. Syracuse is just not on the level this year. They They do have an interesting backcourt with Judah Mintz. They don't have the horses to keep up with us. Ended up winning that game by, I want to say it was like 15 points or something like that. And then we moved on to UCLA. Technically the fifth place game in Maui, which is crazy. It just shows how loaded that field was. It was one of the best preseason tournaments by ranking in history. You know, UCLA was... We actually got out to a pretty comfortable lead, and then they got back into it, and it ended up going down to the final minutes. You know, it was a relatively tough matchup in the second half, but Anton Watson had one of the best games I've seen of any player in the nation this year. Ended up with a career high, like 32 points in that game, only missed one shot from the field. He was like 14 for 15. You know, and he was his typical crafty self on defense, making turnovers in the lane and you know, just generally playing exceptional team defense. I think Maui went pretty well for us overall, you know, outside of the Purdue loss. Like, you know, you were going to probably lose to somebody in that field. It was so stacked, and Gonzaga did not get the seeding that we probably should have got. Purdue round one when you're ranked 11th in the nation, but it is what it is. You know, I'm not really upset about it. I think overall it was a good experience for the team. They learned a lot about themselves. We as a fan base learned a lot. You know, this team does not have a deep backcourt. We really are going to have to play Ryan Nemhard, Nolan Hickman, and Dusty Stromer about 35 plus minutes per game all year. There's going to be games where Ryan and Nolan are going to both play 40 minutes. I mean, it's just, that's kind of the where it's trending. But, you know, overall,
they look good out there together, though. They look real good and efficient. I think the way that Nemhard plays is definitely lending to you all having better performances out there. I think, I don't know what his plus minus is right now, but what the games I've seen, he's looked absolutely essential.
You know, he does so much for the Zags in the pick and roll, which, you know, we knew that with him coming in. Just the level of skill that he has in that system and how well he would mesh with what Mark Few wants to do. And Nolan Hickman sliding to the off-ball position has been a godsend for him. It's taken a lot of pressure off of him. And to be honest, there are times when he actually looks like the better ball handler between the two on the court. Nolan is showing flashes of potentially being, you know, a great point guard for Gonzaga. He made a pass against against USC on Saturday in Vegas that threaded the needle through two defenders and hit the open man, which happened to be Anton in the corner for a three. And it was so well executed, the way that he got the defense to collapse in on him and then kick it out. And that's the type of play that, like, you know, freshman, sophomore Nolan Hickman probably doesn't make because he's going to just go up for it, you know, with triple team, you know, and try to get the basket. And there are times when he makes those circus shots, but, you know, he understands, I think, more now than ever that making that extra pass is the difference between a successful offensive possession and a not successful possession. So, we on Saturday in USC, it was a lot of people questioned whether our backcourt would be able to handle the toughness of Isaiah Collier, who, you know, great player, probably projected to be, you know, I think by some publications, the number one pick in the NBA draft. He's a bully. He gets into the paint and he's always pushing off. He's always trying to, you know, tough his way in for a bucket. And what you saw was our guards not only handled it, but they played exceptional defense on him. Dusty Stromer is a true freshman. He came from a offensive-minded system at Notre Dame Prep in California. And he has been the best team defender outside of Anton Watson on this team all season. No one expects that from a freshman. No one looks at Dusty Stromer and goes, oh, that guy's going to be a tough-as-nails defender. He was on Isaiah Collier for this game. He was the guy who was – he had a big block on him at one point. He had multiple steals. He was contesting vertically all game and just doing an exceptional job of staying in front of his man. And he's been doing this all season. And I cannot speak enough praise about what Dusty Stromer has done so far. initially his shots, he was not finding his three shot early on in the season. And I think that's what everybody expected, was that he was going to be one of our best 3-point shooters. But he finally, it's finally starting to click. He hit, I want to say, 3 or 4 big shots against USC. And, you know, the Zags controlled opening to close. You know, there were times when we were up by 15, 20 points for most of that game.
The way that your season's played out versus the way and the way Kentucky season's played out so far has been pretty similar. I think that, you know, it's going to make, you know, we're going to get to the end of the month here and get through a couple more games. We still got North Carolina and we got to play Louisville, who's looked a little bit more lively in some games than others this year. But we're looking at a pretty heated and highly ranked, potentially, if things work out right, matchup in February, which could really put a lot of people in the selection committee on notice, especially because, you know, I don't really know how the SEC is going to shake out. You hope, obviously, for teams to stay on their level, but we need as many Q1 wins as we can, regardless of if that North Carolina Wilmington loss is a bad one or not to some. Q3 loss could knock you down a seed line. So, you know, that's a game that I could see in being a seed line battle right there. You know, the difference between us being a 3-2 or a 2-1 and you guys being, you know, in the same boat. I don't know how things are lining up right now through your conference. I've wanted to reach out to you a couple of times about St. Mary's in games, and I've avoided doing it, and it ended up working out to my advantage because they got blown out anyway. But I gotta say, man, like, this month is where I start to really focus on basketball and start to really focus on what we've done so far. I gotta say, man, like, I'm really excited, like, even with the loss, excited about what this season's going to hold for Kentucky. But I'm also really excited to talk about what this season's going to lead to with arguments about rankings, because I'm looking at today's AP poll, or the AP poll for this week, and I'm seeing some things that don't match up on those net rankings. And I know there's a lot of other factors that get into it, but I want to hear your best argument for why the net rankings should be utilized, because I have a great counter argument.
Well, the net is not really something that should be looked at this early in the year and focused on, because it's not really – I don't use the net for more than predicting seeding later in the season. As of right now, like, I mean, I'll post, like, I posted a tweet earlier today about the WCC and where they stand in the net rankings. Gonzaga is 31st in the net right now, and we're 7th in the AP poll. Yeah. I think we're right around 7th or 8th in KenPom, about the same in Sagarin. About the same in the BPI. So, like, if you look at the actual analytics that bake in preseason rankings to help offset some of that early statistical noise that makes the net so unpredictable in the first month or so of the season, then, you know, like KenPom, Sagarin, BPI, those are the ones you want to look at. I pay for KenPom because KenPom, to me, is the best of all the analytical systems. It's the easiest to use. It's also the most, I feel like once you get into the inside of the actual team pages, there's just so much information at your fingertips that you don't have with some of the other analytics systems. So to me, that's really the gold standard when it comes to this. There's a blessing and a curse with those preseason rankings that are baked in. So a team like St. Mary's, who has, like you mentioned, had some tough losses early this season so far, I believe they're 3-5. This is the worst start of a season for St. Mary's, I believe, since Randy Bennett became coach at St. Mary's in 2003, I think it was. So, you know, they and this was a highly heralded team that some people thought was not just going to be top 25 good. Jeff Goodman predicted a Final Four for them. Some of the other analysts out there predicted similar type seasons. And, you know, a lot of people predicted them to win the WCC outright, not just by a game or tie with Gonzaga, but by like a couple, a few games over Gonzaga in the WCC this year. Congratulations, St. Mary's. Your preseason bluster turned into mid-December lust for the potential to make the tournament, which does not look likely at this point. They would probably have to beat Gonzaga in both games. They would have to play out the rest of the WCC season in very dominant fashion for them to salvage what has been just an absolute abysmal start to the season for them. So yeah, I digress. At the end, what I'm really trying to say is simply that the net rankings at this point are useless. There's nothing about them that if you look at the net rankings right now and you think this is an actual barometer for where teams are, it's just not. It's just noise. It's statistical noise until we have more data and more more results from tough competition in the opening, month or two.
Well, I'm just going to say St. Mary's is 155, and from the sounds of it, I think you'd agree with that.
Yeah, they probably should be in the 150s right now. That's not necessarily wrong. Yeah.
I don't disagree either, but I love when you get on a roll about St. Mary's there. I will say that I agree with you. I think that the net rankings, all they really do is they give the debate shows something to talk about. It's just all this is weak. This is filler. You know, I think I saw Joe Lenardi already had like two brackets that he's already posted or something like that. Like ESPN, let that man do something else. Like I'm sure he's got a personality outside of bracketology. I mean, I'm sure he's a whole person the other, 11 months of the year. Let the man live. Or just, I don't know, here's a wild concept. Maybe don't have these published the first week of the year. And then at the end of the year, look back on it and go, oh my God, how dumb was that pick? It's like, well, he didn't know what the season was going to turn into.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it comes down to, though. It's like, get the criticism, the general viewpoint that like preseason rankings don't matter. The bracketology this early doesn't matter. The net this early doesn't matter. And that's all true in the grand spectrum of things, because no one cares who was ranked what in November. We care right. What they're ranked when the season's completed and seeding happens. There's a lot of season to shake out before we get to that point. But like the net, for instance, the net is a sorting tool. So like when you think of like when people look at the rankings, they're like, oh, well, why is Princeton is eighth in the nation in the net rankings right now? Well, Princeton's had a really good non-conference season thus far. I believe they're perfect or something like that, and they've had some decent wins. So they look, weighted wise, they look better than some of the teams that have already lost 2-3 times. Tennessee's lost 3 games already. All 3 of those losses were against really good teams. So Tennessee is a good program this year. I know that probably ruffles some Kentucky feathers a little bit, but the reality is that Tennessee is going to very much be right in the race for the SEC title this year, right there with Kentucky.
I need them to carry their weight.
Yeah. Another example of that would be Kentucky's lost 2 games at this point. Mm-hmm. And one of those losses was to one of the top few teams in the nation in Kansas. And then one of them was to, obviously a sub 100 team in UNC Wilmington. So, it's just there's a lot of noise at this point, and it's hard to really justify any of these rankings. But, the bracketology piece, like really to me, it's more like a window into where we are today. So like when Joe puts out his bracketology, like I don't really like the gotcha isms that people put out, like, well, you got that wrong, or you got like, it's all going to be wrong. Exactly. Because it's not the final product. It's just to show you, like, if you were to say today is Selection Sunday, this is what we would probably be looking at roughly for seeding, give or take a seed or two, which, there's always a margin of error in it. And the same could be said for the preseason AP poll or coaches poll or whatever. I mean, it's just, it's the best guess for where we are entering the season based on our knowledge of players going, leaving, coming, who might've progressed more than whatever, it's all guesstimates at this point. And
I mean, they've got Kentucky at 45, and it made me laugh because, the Zags have a great resume on their behalf, and they've got one less loss. They're 31. So I'm thinking, is that the kind of thing that, if Kentucky hadn't lost to Wilmington, would they be
that you top probably 20? Kentucky would probably be in at least the top 30s, I would imagine.
Yeah. And I mean, I said preseason that I didn't care where we were ranked because I thought that we had a lot to prove considering the fact that we only had one returning starter or not even a starter. He was our sixth man. We only had one real contributing player outside of Thiero returning.
Part of it too is Kentucky's big win over Miami. As far as the AP poll is concerned, the net says otherwise. The net says Miami's 63rd. Ken right. Palm says Miami's in the 40s. So right. I think they have them at like 46 right now or something like that. So, you know, Miami doesn't look as good on paper, analytically speaking, today mm-hmm. as they do in the actual rankings, you know, like the right. AP poll or whatever, which I tend to think that Miami is closer to top 10 in the country than they are to the 40s or the 60s or whatever the net has yeah. them at.
You could tell watching that game that they had some game in them. They just something was in the water that night for Kentucky that they weren't going to lose. But you can tell like there were some guys that were really causing problems early on before the separation. I mean, there was only an 8-point game at halftime. So it's not totally, you know, unbelievable that those teams could be better. I just mentioned it more because of you look at like an FAU preseason. Everybody was media darlings because hey, they made the Final Four run last year and they were the trendy pick, and they're ranked high in the net rankings right now. The way
they're ranked high in everything because they beat Texas A&M, right? And then they beat Virginia Tech by like 30. The other night mm-hmm. they've actually I'll be 100% honest, I was not sold on FAU entering the season as a top 15 team. I was thinking so like fringe top 25 and that they were kind of overrated a little bit, but mm-hmm. as the season has shook out so far, I think they're the real deal. I think Elijah Martin is like a superstar.
Well, I will say that, you know, like those teams from last year, I mean, they're all in the top 25, I think, right now in the net, they're all in the top 25 AP rankings, UConn, FAU, Miami, and San Diego State. And you got, you know, like with what I was saying earlier about Miami, with Wooga Poplar, I think is how he says his name, you know, him, Pack, and Joseph are – I remember looking at some of the bets going into the game and thinking, like, man, who are these guys? Like, are they really that good? And, you know, they're expected, you know, they're projecting them to score all these points. And I'm like, man, I got to look these guys up and double check on some things. And I'm looking at the game that they play, and Larry Nagy's got a team, man. They can get up and down the court, and they can, yeah. they can really press some teams and put you in bad situations. So I think that, you know, obviously everybody, you know, we find stuff out in the conference season, but I think that, you know, the way that the ACC has looked this year, I think it might be more favorable for this Miami team. To get where they need to be. I think a team like last year's would have run roughshod through this year's ACC. But, you know, that's still – there's a lot of games that still need to be played for it to even yeah. be fleshed out to see if it's – some of these losses that they've had so far earlier this season have been kind of head-scratchers. But, you know, that's – same can be said about all the power conferences. It's just how things work sometimes.
As bad as the SEC has had a really rough start to the season. There's just been yeah. like Arkansas lost to Greensboro. You all lost to Wilmington. I think there's only two teams in the SEC right now that are undefeated still. That's South Carolina.
South Carolina is undefeated.
And Mississippi?
Mississippi State lost. I think it might be Ole Miss because Mississippi State lost.
It's Ole Miss. And then everybody else in the conference has at least two losses, several with three and mm-hmm. a couple with four. So,
yeah.
And that just shows, like, I mean, it's, I got to extend a little tip of the cap to Rick Barnes for scheduling as tough as he did to open the season. I don't care necessarily about their record right now. I think Dalton Connect is a superstar. I've always been a fan of Zakai Ziegler. I think they have the horses to be a really good team this year. I've watched Arkansas, oddly enough, like four times this year, and I've, other than that Duke game, not been impressed. And granted, I really think they've been playing to the level of their opponent a lot. And that Duke game is, you know, that's really what they did in that game.
A lot of atmosphere helped on that one too.
Absolutely. But overall, just not really impressed with the makeup of that roster. It does not read to me like one of Muss's teams from the last few years.
Yeah.
So
kind of like, know, if they, it feels like last year, the way last year's team started out for them, especially in the SEC, going like 0-5 to start out, feels like this year's team, if that happened, you wouldn't be surprised. Last year's team, it was such a big surprise because everybody thought they were going to be a Final Four contender. You know, Alabama's had a pretty up and down start to the season. And, you know, seeing Mississippi State ranked is nice because in the last couple of decades, they've been a pretty consistent team in the West. Now the divisions are gone, but, you know, in the SEC, they've been pretty competitive. Then you got A&M. But I don't really know. Buzz Williams, man, his teams, they make me real nervous because he is definitely the kind of guy that could get a team to go. But it feels like they only get going in one time. Like they get going in one big moment and then that's it.
Yeah.
In the pan, if you will.
I think Texas A&M is solid this year. I think that Wade Taylor is one of the best guards in the country, and that's what kind of separates them from past A&M teams under Buzz, that he has the legit star guard in that backcourt. And, you know, the losses that they do have to Virginia, who suddenly discovered how to play Tony Bennett's defense in that game, because really before that game they had been struggling all season. Reese Beekman just looked like a superstar. He looked like one of the most heady point guards in the nation. My final four picks before the season started might surprise some people. I picked Virginia, Miami out of the ACC, both of them, as well as Arizona and Marquette. And Arizona obviously looks like one of the best teams in the nation. They're number one in the country right now. They have absolutely owned every team they played. Marquette had a really good showing at Maui overall. And, you know, then just lost to Wisconsin the other night. But, you know, Wisconsin's actually a little bit better this year than I think people assume.
I think they've lost to them like three straight years too. Like I think Wisconsin just had Marquette's number.
That could be part of it. I also just think that Wisconsin is really good at pace. They know how to play their style of basketball and exert their will on the opponent. They drubbed Virginia when they played them. So they have two really solid wins so far. And then Miami, you know, we talked about them a little bit. But, yeah, Virginia, you know, any Tony Bennett's system, the pack line – defense that he runs is such that when he has the personnel to execute it properly and just at least a few guys who can put the ball in the basket, Virginia has a chance to be special. That's all it takes. It really only takes and Reese Beekman is so good, in my opinion. I think he's probably going to be near the top of the ACC Player of the Year race, whether he wins it or not. And I also like, you know, some of their younger players that they brought in. Buchanan's a real interesting guy. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think that Texas A&M's losses are bad. Like we talked about, Florida Atlantic probably has the goods on some level. Are they top 10? I don't know. But they're certainly top 25 in the nation.
They're 11th. They're 11th right now.
I'm just saying,
adjacent.
Like,
I know. Like I said, the thing about Buzz is just he makes me nervous.
Yeah,
he's not the guy.
Ohio State, second game of the year in Ohio State. Not that Ohio State's amazing this year, but that's a solid win. And it was at Ohio State, so it was like a true road game.
Well, even their game against Oral Roberts a couple nights ago, or at this point it was almost 2 weeks ago. They got down, they were fighting, and you know they showed resiliency and they came out and won the game. I think it was by 8. Yeah. But, you know, they've got the tenacity. It's just watch them throughout the year. Pay attention to what they're doing, and you'll see what I mean. Like, they'll come out and they'll beat the pants off of Kentucky one day. And then the next week, in the next game they lose to Ole Miss by 40, and you're like, what is going on? How do you?
I think we're going to learn a lot more about Texas A&M in the next week or two here when they play Memphis and Houston. Those are going to be two interesting games, just matchups wise. I like Memphis a lot this year. I think that they showed a lot in the Bahamas overall. Mm-hmm. I thought they played pretty well, and I like what Penny has done with that roster. I think that they're intriguing to me a little bit. And then Houston, I mean, we know Kelvin Sampson, his system has been fantastic for years. And LJ Cryer moving into that system this year is such a coup for what he's trying to accomplish. I think exactly. Houston is right there in the Final Four mix again, as they've been really for the last 4 or 5 years now. So, I'm really intrigued to see. I think that's going to be a really interesting matchup between Wade Taylor and the guards that Houston has. So we'll see how that kind of shakes out in a couple of weeks.
So what do you have? Let's just say at this point, a couple days into December, a month in, what's your biggest takeaway? Like who's your biggest winner so far, and who is Arizona. The one? Okay. And then who has the most to prove that you think can, and who has the most to prove that you think won't?
Just from where they were preseason ranked to where they are now and what they have left to prove. I mean, you could say that like St. Mary's has a lot to prove still, but I don't think that they're going to be in the conversation that people thought they were going to be in earlier this season. So that's not really a good pick. I think Duke has a lot to prove. I think Duke has, they came in, there was some talk about them being, they should have been preseason number one over Purdue. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, I never really saw that out of this team. You know, one of their best players coming into the season, Kyle Filipowski, was coming off of surgery during the offseason that a lot of people weren't really talking about, which kind of was odd to me. And, you know, Jeremy Roach, I think, has grown a bit, but I still have question marks about him in big game situations. And some of their younger guys, Jeremy Cain, Tyrese Proctor, Caleb Foster, it's the thing. I know a lot of people see these five-star freshman kids. Kentucky fans are probably about as guilty of this as a fan base as any fan base. And this is just me being frank here with BBN for a moment. Duke and Kentucky do this every year. They get these five-star kids. It does not work more often than not. The five-star kids are kids. They are young. They are not yet proven. They haven't been through the wars. They don't know what it's like to play at the speed of the college game versus what they did in high school. And to be honest, even if they did have that experience, a lot of these guys are better suited for the NBA style of play than they are for college. It is what it is. I think Kentucky's saving grace this year with their freshman is Reed Sheppard, of all players. You know, coming into this season, a lot of people expected what? Seventh, eighth man out of Reed. They expected him to be kind of a lesser role player who might get
He was going to be a shoot guy. As soon as he catch it, everybody else shoot. Yeah. That's what they thought.
And what he's looked like is otherworldly, godlike in his ability to shoot this year. What really stands out to me from Reed so far is his cojones. The man has significantly more confidence. He does not look like a freshman in his confidence level, is what I will say. So back
plays
to
like
Duke.
A veteran.
Yeah, exactly. Back to Duke. I have not seen that from any of their freshmen so far. I've not seen that confidence level that you would want out of those guys to lead your team. So as a result, here we are. Duke's lost three games to this point. They lost at home to Arizona. Good game. They were in it till the end.
It was a really good game. It was probably my favorite game of the year so far.
And to their credit, Arkansas was running them off the court, and they didn't die. They came back, and they almost pulled it out at the end in front of a ravenous Bud Walton So, you know, like I will give them credit there. They did stand up for themselves late in that game, but
they get it to like, they got it to like five, like four or five at the end there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like a single possession at one point, real crazy. Late in that game. But you know, they should not have let that hole get dug so deep that they could not come out of it, which is part of the problem. And then they just lost to Damon Stoudemire's, Georgia Tech. So, you know, that's not a good loss.
Georgia
at
Tech
all.
Team that you were very high on this offseason. I remember talking about Damon Stoudemire.
Yeah. So I think Damon's going to do some good things in Atlanta. However, I don't think they're there yet, which means that this loss is a bad loss for Duke. Georgia Tech's probably going to bring up the rear of the ACC this year. But, and you know, heading down their schedule, Duke still has Baylor in the non-conference season. And we any Scott Drew team is going to be a test. So we'll see where that one goes.
There's going to be a significant contingent of the Big Blue Nation watching that game for research purposes.
I'm sure.
Scott Drew.
So in your opinion, who is the biggest winner of this season so far?
I mean, it's going to say I'm a homer. I don't care. It's Reed Shepherd. I mean, we're talking about a guy that I think the best team so far has been Houston. I'll be completely honest. I don't think that there's any doubt in my mind. I do think that Zach Edey's looked a lot better this year than he did last year so far to this point. I'm not as high on Purdue, though, just because I'm not a real big Matt Painter guy. Never have been. And I think that he limits his team with his coaching abilities. But again, like you mentioned earlier, Kelvin Sampson has his guy and LJ Cryer. And I think that they're really poised to make some noise in the Big 12 this year. It's going to be, just them, Kansas, Texas, just knocking each other down all season. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. But Reed Shepherd, man, he went from being the guy that like was also, oh yeah, and Reed, because he was a four-star, and Reed, he's the Kentucky guy, like to... He was, I think, projected this past week in a mock draft at like 20, like first round, but almost lottery. And we're talking about he's playing with Rob Dillingham, DJ Wagner, absolute dogs, both of them. And I mean, we knew DJ was going to be a dog coming in, but Rob has been nothing short of impressive as well. Both of those guys are kind of taking a backseat to him right now. I mean, Rob's done his own thing, but Reed he's got to be the front runner for SEC Freshman of the Year. Has to be right now. I think that you've got a lot of really good teams out West this year. The field is, like we said last year, you're seeing a lot of attrition out there where it's starting to become more about positioning with some of these non-conference games leading into conference games. It's going to be really interesting to see how the division from the non-conference to the conference, what changes for some of these teams. Because there's always a team that looks really good in the non-conference, but then they slip early on in their conference. There's always a team every year. And I don't really know who it could be. I think the Big 12 is going to be the best conference, at least at the top end of this year. And I think that maybe the SEC is the worst. Might be the ACC. It just kind of depends.
The ACC is still the worst power conference.
I mean, they have more teams is what hurts them.
The Pac-12 is pretty bad too. Yeah, it does. It does hurt them having more teams, but the ACC.
Because I mean, Kentucky's going to add. Or SEC is going to add Texas and Oklahoma next year. And Texas is obviously not a bad basketball program, but Oklahoma has been turning things around in the last 5-6 years. So,
yeah, I think that the Big 12 is head and shoulders the best conference in the country, top to bottom. There's not a deeper league in America. And I mean, really, like, the only program in that entire league this year that's probably not a great basketball team is UCF. Like, even BYU.
Oh, yeah, I forget they're in there.
BYU is like 7-0 right now. They're top 10 in KenPom.
They're 14th.
They They leave the WCC and then suddenly realize that they can play basketball again. Who knows where that came from, but you know, here we are. I kind of had this jotted down. I was thinking like tier levels, like if you had to rank the tiers, so like tier one are your teams that you currently think are probably Final Four capable. Tier two would be teams that, you know, maybe like Sweet 16, Elite Eight capable. And then tier three, you know, maybe like Sweet 16, round of 32, like they might win a game or two in the tournament. If you had to look at the tiers right now, I will just say this. This was really hard after tier one because there's just so much that still needs to be done to truly gauge where some of these programs are at. But in my opinion right now, tier one, Arizona, Purdue, UConn, and Houston are probably the four best teams I've seen all year. I think Kansas is real close, but I question that depth a little bit, but I do think that they are Final Four capable. I mean, Hunter Dickinson's going to make up for a lot of those depth issues.
You got to understand something. Kansas is one non-factor player going nuclear hot against Kentucky away from having two losses already.
They almost lost to Tennessee also, and they almost lost to Connecticut. But they beat Connecticut and they beat Tennessee. Those are two really, really good wins. And obviously Kentucky win is going to age well as well. I do think that the depth is a real issue for Kansas. I mean, really, he's like six deep. That's about it in his rotation. But, you know, I've seen teams like Villanova several years ago win national titles going six deep. So it's not it's not out of the realm of possibility. I think Kansas is in that tier one right now. They could probably be moved down to tier two depending upon how the rest of their season goes. But as of right now, I think Kansas is love them or hate them, and you do hate them. They are probably in that conversation. And then Marquette would round out my tier one. I think Marquette is really, really good. They have an exceptional backcourt led by Tyler Kolek, and Iguohara is one of the more interesting players in the country. He's such a fabulous two-way player, great defender, really athletic, can get in the paint and cause trouble on offense against some of the other bigs in the country, and obviously he can knock down a shot occasionally too. They kind of remind me a little bit of last year's UConn team, but I would say like UConn light. I don't think they're dominant quite like that UConn team was. This year's UConn team is obviously different than last year's UConn team as well. But you know, Donovan Klingon is an exceptional player, one of the best bigs in the country. They do still have, you know, good supporting cast across the board. But so that would be my tier one. I think it's a pretty clear cutoff line from that tier to the next. Like it's a decent drop. Maybe you can make the argument that Baylor could be closer to tier one than they are, but I just don't think Baylor has the guard play that they've had in the past. And that, you know, so far their schedule's not been so tough that they've been able to be exposed yet. So yeah.
Favorable schedules always help early on.
Yeah. And I think Kentucky and Gonzaga are both in that tier two. I think Kentucky and Gonzaga are both probably like a second weekend ceiling team right now. Whether that actually happens or not, obviously you have to play the games, but you know, I think Kentucky has the shooting this year that they have not had in the past, and it's going to help them come March, where, you know, this could be the first time Calipari has been back to the Sweet 16 or Elite Eight in what, 5 years or so?
Since 19.
Definitely, I think this is Kentucky's chance. I mean, there's a lot of shooting. That to me in the tournament, it can be your blessing and your curse, obviously. Sure. You know, if the shooting's off and that's all you do, then you're gonna struggle. But this is the sixth best 3-point shooting team in the nation right now by percentage.
And that's on
a relatively low volume. Like Kentucky's in the 100s in 3-point attempts. So it's not like that's their only thing they do.
Yeah, but for Cal teams, this is, I think it's the, it's battling with the 16-17 team right now for highest average points per game through eight games. And then as well, I think it's still the 16-17 team that they're competing with for made threes. So there's a lot of hype around Kentucky this year. And I think that a lot of it's deserved, whether it's, you know, from freshmen actually showing up or from, you know, the excitement of what can be. But I would agree with that. I think that Kentucky, Gonzaga, Baylor, and then, you know, you put teams like probably, I would say, a Texas. I feel confident being a tier two team, and maybe like a Creighton. I'm not sold on North Carolina yet. I'm not really sold on teams like Colorado State and BYU. I think that Miami has the potential to be there. Like I said earlier, it's going to come down to guys like Poplar and Pack being on. Tennessee, you know, absolutely hope that every game they play, they lose. But I think that they definitely have the ability to be in that tier two conversation. The thing is, I think that your tier two teams are so much more numerous because second weekend, you know, that's usually 16 teams. But I really think that you could probably argue 20 to 25 teams, maybe even 30, fit in that category at the moment. And you could even move some of those tier one teams around and shuffle them a little bit, like with a Kansas versus another, you know, just shift them in and out as the season goes. And I don't think you'll see too many of those teams drop below that. I mean, you'll see them, some of them naturally have to drop to three, but I think that your top 25 teams right now are probably going to be true to form most of the year. I mean, maybe like a James Madison or something, because they're in the Sun Belt, you know, losses for them are devastating. I think it could be really interesting to see what this year shakes out to. So I'm really excited, man. And now that the bowls have been decided and everything, and I don't have to worry about football, but certain set times, man, I'm diving into basketball head first, and I'm about to enjoy this time of the year almost as much as March.
Yeah. I will leave our audience with this one interesting idea, and that is give the Mountain West a chance when it comes to college basketball this season. Last year, they were a multiple bid league. They got San Diego State to the national title game, of course. This year, they have 8-0 Colorado State with Isaiah Stevens at point guard, who is one of the top three, in my opinion, point guards in the entire nation. I think he's got NBA written all over him. I think San Diego State is super good again. They're 7-1 right now. New Mexico, Rick Pitino Jr.'s squad with Jamal Mashburn Jr., with Jalen House, with lots of talent on that New Mexico squad. They're 7-1 right now as well. And then Nevada, Steve Alford's squad out in Reno, has been super impressive in my opinion so far as well. I think that there's a lot of talent out there to keep an eye on in the Mountain West. I think they could potentially be a four bid league this year if the right situations occur, because obviously they can't beat up on each other all conference season.
Yeah.
And then outside of that, Boise State's also a super talented team as well. You know, there's a lot going on there in the Mountain West. Definitely some good late night basketball for all of you out in Kentucky. If you end up staying up late and want to catch some good games, it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
I'll tell you what, man, I'm just ready for conference play to start, ready to see these teams start showing their true identities. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm as excited for March as I've ever been, especially with a 6-2 start. Who would have thought 6-2 would do it for me? But man, I'm just ready for Saturday.
All right, folks, that wraps up another episode of the Switch Everything podcast. I'm your host, Josh Linke, and the biggest UNC Wilmington fan I've ever met is Elliot Braxick. Thank you for joining us on Switch Everything.
I'm sad. So sad.